Certainly one of the needs, one that I'd like to talk about this morning, is for us to have a greater and deeper appreciation for what the Lord has done for us, and then to let that impact our lives. Over the last couple of weeks, I've attended a couple of different events called the Passion of Christ. Last night I went with the group from here over to Lake Wales. We enjoyed some time together, fellowship. We were also challenged with a deep, serious reminder of what the Lord has done for us. By seeing a reenactment on stage of the crucifixion of Jesus, of the abuse that he received, and of the pain that he suffered. The same story that was told very graphically in Mel Gibson's movie that just came out a couple of weeks ago. And one that, as Cletus said last week, I encourage you to see, because it does so graphically portray the cross and the cost of what our salvation, what it costs for our salvation. But I'd like to suggest something to you this morning, that even if we see this greatness of the sacrifice on the cross, it's not going to change us. It won't change us much if we don't realize that we need to change. This morning, what I want us to do is to look at a life-changing meeting that one man had with Jesus. A man who was very aggressively set in his ways until Jesus turned his life inside out. The story is told in Mark chapter 5, beginning with verse 1. They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes, and when Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an evil spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Swear to God that you won't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you evil spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs, allow us to go into them." He gave them permission, and the evil spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and countryside. And the people went out to see what had happened. They saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your family and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he's had mercy on you. So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him. And all the people were amazed. There are three characters in this story that I'd like for us to talk about. First of all, there's the man called Legion. And then there's Jesus. And then there's us. Now, I'd like for us to consider all three of these briefly this morning. First, think about the man called Legion. He had what many of us say we want. He had freedom. No man could bind him. He refused to accept any kind of restraint. If they put him in chains, he broke them. If they put him in irons, he tore them off. No man could restrain him. He was free. Free! That's the same kind of freedom a lot of people have today, isn't it? Nobody can restrain them. No one was strong enough to subdue him. It's like our culture today where freedom is license to do whatever I want to do, regardless of how it affects me or anybody else. No societal restraints are accepted. Nothing can restrain my freedom. No one can tell me what to do, and no law can tell me what to do, and no law can control my behavior. I will go ahead and do what I want to, regardless of the law. You don't believe that's rampant in our society today? Just watch your news for a while. And I'm not just talking about the people that are being prosecuted as criminals. How many gay marriages have been performed in violation of California law or Massachusetts law or New York law? And now I read they're wanting to do it right here in Orange County. It's against the law. It's not legal. But they're scoff laws. Nobody can restrict my freedom. That's the kind of world we live in. This man had that kind of freedom. He even had majority approval. You notice that? And Jesus asked him, "What's your name?" He says, "My name is Legion, for we are many." It's amazing to me here how he identifies me and us. He does not see any distinction between him and the demons that possessed him. And you say, well, the people around there were afraid of him. They didn't approve of what he was doing. That's true. But he had a majority approval of the only majority that he was counting. The only ones he counted was ones that were voting for him. And he had a majority. Right? But yet he lived in a culture of death and destruction, both in his habitat and his habit. His habitat was among the tombs. That's where he lived, among the dead people. He lived night and day among the tombs, among dead people. But I wonder, how different is that from many of us today? You know, Paul wrote in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 6 that those who live for pleasure are dead even while they live. Do we just live among dead people? Among people who just seek pleasure and nothing more? And that's all life is to us, is just pleasure? Are we among those? His habits also were death and destruction. He would cry out and cut himself with stones. Was he a happy man? I don't think so. But boy, he sure didn't want to change. Just like many people today who destroy themselves. He was self-destructive in what he would do. He had cut himself. You say, boy, how could anybody do that? Last night we stopped at a station to gas up after the Passion play, and I saw a couple in there. Each one of them must have had at least 50 piercings in their face alone. I don't know what they had in other parts of their body. And I didn't ask. One of them was a spike, looked like it was about that long, sticking out of the fellow's cheek. People cut themselves. Why? I don't know. But they do. I mean, he cut himself because he was filled with demons. A legion of demons. And why do other people do it? I don't know. But this story is not so far-fetched, is it? It doesn't sound so far-fetched when we think about what goes on today. But that's not the only way people are self-destructive. People destroy themselves with drugs and alcohol. People destroy themselves just by sin, because wages of sin is death. And it's destructive. That's why it's sinful. The Lord knows what destroys us. And He's told us and warned us about it. And He said, don't do this. But we do it anyway, and we're self-destructive when we do it. And this man resented efforts to deliver him from his wretchedness. What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I can almost hear people today, why are you interfering in my life? Who do you think you are? What gives you the right to tell me what to do? You ever hear anybody talk that way? Let's get a little more personal. Have you ever talked that way? Here was a man who resented the efforts of one whom he himself called the Son of the Most High God to help him. He said, swear to God that you won't torture me. Now, what was this torture that Jesus was bringing on this man? You know, it's easy to throw out accusations. But what's the basis of the accusation? It's easy for somebody to say, well, the police were brutal to me. That's easy to say. What was the brutality? It's easy to say the Son of Man, the Son of God, tortured me. What was this torture? For Jesus had said to him, come out of this man, you evil spirit. Now, isn't this just like those today that complain about violation of their rights when somebody points out that there's a better way of living than the way they're living? What are you doing? Violating my right to live this way. Who do you think you are? And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. Notice again how he identifies himself with the demons that possess him. Just like many today identify their lifestyle with themselves. They identify themselves with their lifestyle. They say, well, that's just what I am. That's who I am. That's what I am. There's only one I am, and that's God. The rest of us are in the process of becoming. And when we try to say, well, that's just who I am, and that's just what I am, that's just the way I am, when somebody tries to correct us, we're putting ourselves on God, in God's place. God is I am. We're becoming. But then there was Jesus. Here was the man, Legion, he would call him. That's what he called himself. My name is Legion. Our name is Legion, for we are many. My name is Legion, he said, didn't he? For we are many. Then there's Jesus. Jesus, who came to make things right. He had been busy on the other side of the lake. He came across the lake now to continue his work, and the first thing that meets him is this crazy naked man. Luke tells us, Mark didn't mention this, Luke tells us that he didn't have any clothes on when he came running and yelling at Jesus. Can you imagine having a crazy naked man come running at you? You just got off the boat. And by the way, when they were in the boat out on the lake, there was a great storm. So Jesus said, "Peace be still." Boy, can you imagine what you'd feel like if you were one of his disciples and you finally got on solid ground again, and here comes this crazy naked man yelling at you. But here's Jesus. His whole purpose in being here is to make things right. "I've come that they may have life," he said, "and have it to the full, have it more abundantly." He's come to save us from our sins. But he's come for more than just to save us from our sins. He's come to save us and deliver us from our sinfulness, to change the way we live. Not just to forgive us for what we've done that's wrong, but to help us to change what we're doing that's wrong into doing what's right. That's why he's here. And when he saw this world that he came to, he saw more than just the surface. He saw beneath the surface to the realities. He didn't just see the way things seem to be with all of the glitz and glitter. He saw the way things really are. You know, in the commercials, they'll try to show us the glitz and the glitter. They don't tell you the broken lives that are associated with the gambling, with the alcohol. Cigarette companies, until they were forced to, never told you of the cancer victims. Boy, they sure don't want to tell you that. Why? Well, you might not buy their product if they tell you the end result of it. So they don't want to tell you those things. But it's there. And Jesus sees what's really there. He really sees beneath our freedoms to the slavery that is controlling us. And he saw beneath this man's freedom to live among the tombs and to cut himself and to be in violent opposition to everything around him, doing violence to himself and to others. Jesus saw beneath that to the demons that were within the man. And he made a distinction between the demons and the man. He said to the demons, "You come out of him." He sees the same thing when he looks at any of us. When he saw a multitude of people, Matthew says in chapter 9 and verse 36, when he saw them, he had compassion on them. For he saw that they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. He saw what they really are, not just the appearance of things. How do you see people? How do I see people? Do you see people as, oh, they're just an aggravation? There's somebody that's always making demands. They don't know what they'd want. They're going here. They're going there. They're asking me for this or for that or the other. How do you see them? As somebody that's interfering with me? Or do you see them as harassed and helpless and sheep without a shepherd? You see, Jesus saw this man not just as a crazy naked man running around yelling, but he saw him as a man who could be redeemed, who could have his life changed into something productive and real, something of value. That's the way Jesus saw it. And so Jesus was not willing to live and let live. You know, that's the creed of our culture today, isn't it? You do your thing and I'll do mine. You just live and let live. But you know, this creed allows us to ignore our fellow man's indiscretions and his potential for growth and for change and for improvement. It allows us to just accepts Cain's premise. Well, I'm not my brother's keeper. I'm not his boss. Well, you can be your brother's helper without being his boss, can't you? Was Jesus trying to be this man's boss? Well, in a sense, I guess he was. He was the Lord. But what he's trying to do is change the man's way of thinking so that he wants to do what's right. Not just because somebody tells him to do it, but because he knows that's the thing that he wants to do and that he ought to do, and it's the best thing to do. And so Jesus became involved in Legion's life. Even though Legion didn't want him to, Jesus still was insistent. And he became involved. First of all, by noticing him. Of course, when a crazy naked man comes running at you, it's hard not to notice you, I guess. But he didn't run away when the man came running at him. Most anybody else would have. I probably would have. Got back in that boat. I faced the storm at sea instead of this guy. But he approached. Jesus approached him. He didn't run. He walked toward him. And then he confronted him. Come out of him. And then he became involved in his life by delivering him. You know, people get sidetracked on all kinds of things in this story. Well, what about those pigs that Jesus destroyed? Jesus didn't destroy any pigs. The demons did. The same demons that were destroying that man destroyed those pigs. Not Jesus. Don't blame Jesus for the devil's work. People still do that today, don't they? They blame the Lord for what the devil does. But Jesus became involved by delivering him. Now, what about you and me? What about us? What's Jesus done for you? Has He delivered you? Has He forgiven you? There's a story over in Luke chapter 7, the story of Simon the Pharisee. He'd invited Jesus for dinner. You know, the Pharisees and Jesus had a very interesting relationship all the way through his life. They never could really figure this guy out. They never could figure Jesus out. He had them pegged to a T. But they couldn't figure him out. They knew he was somebody special, but they couldn't quite accept who he really was. And they had to find something wrong with him. They were always looking to catch him in something wrong. And so Simon invited Jesus for dinner, but he wasn't a very gracious host. He didn't give him any water, to offer him any water to wash his feet or anything when he came in, which was the customary thing. But while they were eating, this woman, as polite language says, woman of the town. The scripture says a woman who had lived a sinful life. That's a polite way of saying she was a prostitute. This prostitute came in, and while Jesus was reclining at dinner, they didn't sit on chairs the way we do at a formal dinner. They would have a very low table, and they would lie on pillows, and their feet would be out behind them, and they'd kind of be leaning on their pillows and their elbows and all, and they'd be eating off the table there in front of them. But this prostitute came in and she poured ointment on his feet. And she began to weep. And her tears fell down on his feet and she wiped them with her hair. And Simon was looking at all of this, and he's thinking in himself, this man can't be a prophet. He wouldn't let such a woman touch him if he knew what she was. You see, he was operating from a different premise. Simon was operating from the premise that if the crazy naked man comes running at me, I'm going to get out of his way. I'm not going to let him touch me. He might contaminate me. But Jesus was operating from the premise that here is a woman that can be redeemed. And she did what she did because she loved Jesus. Now, why did she come to love Jesus, such a woman? I don't know. We're not told. Had she heard something about him somewhere else? Had she heard him speak? Had she been in an audience when he had spoken? I don't know how she had come to love him, but she had. Maybe she had seen in him the same kind of thing that he demonstrated in another case when there was a woman involved, caught in the very act of adultery. And some wanted to stone her, and Jesus said, "Let him who's without sin cast the first stone." And when they all left, he said to her, "Does no man condemn you?" She said, "No man, Lord." And he said, "Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more." Maybe she saw a hope for changing her life, and that's why she loved this man. But while Simon is thinking, this man can't be a prophet, and this woman is washing his feet, Jesus speaks to Simon and says, "Simon, tell me something. If you forgive two different people a debt, one of them a little bit and the other one a whole bunch, who's going to love you more?" Simon says, "Well, I guess the one that was forgiven the most." And Jesus said, "That's right. This woman loves much because she's been forgiven much." And then after the end of it, he said to the woman, "Go, your faith has saved you." This woman's been forgiven a lot, so she loves a lot. But Simon, you don't love very much because you don't have very much sense of being forgiven. I'm paraphrasing what he said to him, but that's the essence of it. What about us? What's Jesus forgiven us of? You, me. If you're not aware of how much He's forgiven, you're not likely to love Him very much. Has He delivered you from much? Has He delivered you from slavery to things like alcohol and drugs? I imagine there's some people here today that that's true of. He's delivered you from that. And because of that, you love Him. You love Him a great deal. There may be some others that He's delivered from walking in pride and selfishness. You know, those are those nice sins that are on the inside. You can't look at a man walking down the street and tell if he's a man who's full of pride and selfishness, self-centeredness. They really go together, don't they? Maybe He's delivered you from the live and let live sort of thinking that is so common in our world. What's He delivered you of? Now, when you think about that for a little bit, do you beg to go with Jesus? This man did. Legion did. He begged. When Jesus was leaving, he begged to go with Him. The people of the region didn't want Jesus. They begged Him as well, but they begged Him to leave. Jesus won't stay where He's not wanted. He won't stay if He's not wanted. And if the day comes when we don't want Him in America, He'll leave. He'll leave if we don't want Him. He'll go. But when He was leaving, the legion begged Him, "Take me with you. Let me go with you." Do we beg to go with Jesus? And you know, wanting to be with Jesus is good. He was begging for something that was good. But Jesus wanted an even greater good for this man. Jesus wanted this man's family and friends to also come to know the Lord and what he had done. And so he told him, he said, no, you stay here and you go and tell your family, your friends, what great things the Lord has done for you. Now, have you ever stopped to think that the Lord wants the same thing for you? He wants your family and your friends to know about him. He wants that. And you know, when your family and friends know about the Lord, does that benefit you? Of course it does. Because it means that they are friends for eternity now, not just for this time only, but also for eternity. Friends whom you will have in heaven with you. And that's what the Lord wants for you. He wants it to be the very best that it can be. And so Legion began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all of the people were amazed. You see, the testimony of a redeemed person has a great impact. Your personal story can make a difference in somebody's life. We need to remember where we have come from, what we've been forgiven of, what we've been delivered from. Because this story of Legion is our story as well. The demons may not control us in exactly the same way that they controlled Legion. But let me assure you, they still have power to influence us. They tempt us and they enslave us with sin. And Jesus said, when we're in sin, we're slaves of sin. We're slaves. And they still enslave us today as well. And we need to remember what Jesus has done for us. We need to be eternally grateful for the kindness and mercy that he shows us. And then we need to go out and tell somebody else what the Lord has done for us. But you know, first of all, before we can do that, we've got to accept his offer of salvation. Could you imagine Legion, while he was still that crazy naked man, going around talking to people about how much the Lord had done for him? We've got to accept his offer of salvation and deliverance. But you're not going to accept it if you're like Legion and believe that you don't need salvation and redemption and deliverance. But if you can look at your life and look at the Lord and look at what he's done and what he offers, and you can say, you know, I really need to make the commitment to him. I really need to change. My life needs to be changed and turned around, and Jesus is the one who can help me to do it, who can turn me around. Then you can come to him, turning away from sin, trusting in the Lord, and dying with him, being buried with him, and being raised with him from the waters of baptism. Will you come while we stand and sing?